Two Los Angeles County residents are dealing with what's called raccoon roundworm. It sounds like it's a rare infection, but it does impact the spinal cord, brain, and eyes. So you can imagine when you hear about it, especially here in the U.S., we are concerned about it. So Dr. Fred Brown of Griffin Health is back, as he is each week here on WICC, our infectious disease expert. I've never heard of raccoon roundworm, Dr. Brown, but you can imagine it doesn't sit well with me. What is this?
Of course not. It is a parasite. It's a very interesting parasite. It is raccoon roundworm. It's Bay Ascaris is the name of it. Ascaris is actually a common roundworm in itself. This is actually a special roundworm that is found in raccoons. So the way that you get this, and this is interesting. This is something that I teach in my class. The way that this works is usually in warmer areas. It has a relation to roundworm. You typically see it. You'll see it in California. You'll see it in Georgia is usually a common. You usually see it around this area just because of it's interesting. I'm not sure exactly why this area, but again, usually around this time you start to see it. So raccoons are somewhat social, and part of their habits is to have an area in which they use their own latrine. They literally call it a raccoon latrine.
That's funny.
It's around their den.
So
they have a den, and then outside their den, they have an area where they do their business. So they'll actually have it, and that's called a raccoon latrine. If someone gets in contact with that area and accidentally, I know these are gross, but accidentally consumes the eggs of this parasite, this is how you end up getting sick.
I mean, I would imagine that's like if somebody like eats dirt, as in like kids.
Yes.
Got it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. And,
okay.
And again, this is why it's relatively rare, right?
Yeah.
So you have to have all these pieces. You have to have one, you need to be in an area where it's warm enough for there to be.
Are we not warm enough?
We're not really warm enough.
Okay,
I mean, it really would have to be special. I mean, because you have to have it. It needs to be warm enough for a parasite to live.
Okay,
so
can I?
If it gets cold, parasites die.
Okay, fine. So can? But are we still allowed to say here in Connecticut, "Dirt don't hurt"? Are we allowed to say that?
Don't eat dirt. Yes. Yeah.
That's, oh no, no. That's, I say don't. Dirt doesn't hurt. Like if.
Oh, don't. Yeah. Well, I would also say don't eat dirt.
Okay. Fine. Okay.
Sorry. I mean,
I don't know. I grew up
tomato.
In the 90s, Dr. Brown, where it was like, hey, let's build up their immune system. So what if they eat, you know, mud pies for real? But we don't live in those times anymore, I guess. We
no, I would. There's other things that we can talk about in relation to that.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Yeah, I would just as a rule of thumb, not eat dirt or weird things.
Okay. But I mean, I think the bigger takeaway here is it doesn't
but
sound
the bigger
like
takeaway
raccoon
is that
roundworm
it's very,
is not
it's,
here in
it's
Connecticut.
Already, yeah, it's already very unusual. It's very rare. The likelihood that we can, I mean, listen, anywhere a raccoon is possible, but again, the likelihood in this area is pretty low. I'd have to look and see if there's ever been a recorded case in Connecticut or in New England. As I said, it's usually more southern, warmer areas, more temperate areas that have where the eggs can last a little bit longer.
Okay.
And then usually we see it in children.
Okay.
So it's very unusual to see also in adults. And that actually has to do with a child who accidentally comes across one of these latrines, gets contaminated, and then they end up getting a very, very serious infection. So that's the issue, and this is where it gets a lot of press, is that it's rare, but when you do get infected from it, it's deadly.
Got
and
it.
That's where this is why the press picks it up, usually around this time. And again, it's a pretty bad disease. It's really hard to treat. Nausea, vomiting, liver swelling, blindness, and then you can coma and death.
Okay.
So it is
yikes.
Very bad.
All right, but it doesn't sound like it's here in Connecticut, at least. So
correct.
That's
yes.
Good.
Yes.
That's
I mean,
a big
again,
takeaway.
You are correct. I mean, I wouldn't go around eating dirt, but I mean, you know, it's a little. At least you know you won't get this from it.
Okay, that's fair. All right, I'll take that. Dr. Brown is here. You know, speaking of kids, Dr. Brown, I saw federal officials are warning that a drop in vaccinations in the U.S. may have led to an increase in flu deaths among children. Did you see this report this week?
I did.
Yikes.
Yeah. And it's definitely concerning, especially those that are at risk. it is important to get these vaccines. There's a reason why we have vaccines.
I mean, it's really concerning in this. I mean, for people who didn't see it, the CDC said yesterday that nearly 200 kids died from influenza-related illnesses during the most recent flu season. Most of the children who died were eligible for a vaccine, but they didn't get one. I didn't even realize that many kids in the U.S. died with this. I had no idea.
Yeah, there's on average about 40,000 people die from flu a year in the U.S.
I don't feel like that's advertised enough.
Yeah, it's really, and that's a mild flu year. When you talk about more aggressive flu years, it could be up to 100,000 people who die from the flu.
Seriously?
Seriously. That's why it's so important for us to get the flu shot. It's a major, major issue.
That's crazy. But when did they come out with the flu shot, Dr. Brown? When did that become a thing?
I do not know offhand.
I mean, has it been around for decades, though?
It's been around for a while.
Okay.
It's been around for decades. Mandatory, at least from healthcare, has been within the last, I'd say, 10 years. I think healthcare has been doing it. So, yeah, clearly a couple of decades.
Well, the reason I'm getting at that is I don't remember that being a requirement when I was in elementary school. Now, of course, that's 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But that's why I was saying, wow.
And that's relative. So the school-age children is more relatively new. That's probably been within the last decade or so.
Okay. That's what I was trying to get at. Because I'm like, man, 200 kids this year. That's crazy.
And then I think we've been able to expand it given the purity of how we're going. So if you imagine sort of how vaccines have been developed, the concern is that, you know, the purity of the vaccine itself. And now we have, you know, perfectly pure vaccine, as opposed to what was in the past, where there were some impurities and some side effects and some issues associated with it. That's pretty much gone away with our current techniques.
Wow. Another thing, Dr. Brown, really quick. I saw there's a new study about 39 million people could die worldwide by 2050 because of antimicrobial resistance. This was out of London. Did you see this?
I did see that. That was very concerning.
That's insanely concerning.
Yeah,
I live off of that. Are you kidding me?
Yes, that is very concerning. I saw that, and I saw that. It's actually all through the infectious disease news. That's just a huge thing. By the way, 1945 is when the first flu vaccine. I just did a fact check.
I love how you do that while you're doing a live radio interview.
Course,
there's not many who would
course.
Do that. That's really impressive. That is called multitasking at its best, I tell you. That's amazing.
I did see. So this is definitely something that we've talked about before and very concerning about antibiotic resistance. We know that antibiotic resistance continues. We know there's different ways that we can develop antibiotic resistance. We know there's been an increased use of antibiotics, and we know that's how antibiotic resistance occur. And we've talked before about this, about the different ways that it works. It's not just about, you know, us as humans going and getting a vaccine. It's about our animals. It's about how we're treating our animals and giving antibiotics. Those antibiotics, they may have different names, but they're still the same antibiotic. And then antibiotics in agriculture is a major issue also.
The average person uses antibiotics all the time, right? Right? That's why this study is really concerning. Even our own infectious disease expert, Dr. Brown, said, yeah, I saw that study and we were not happy about it. This week, major news in infectious disease, a new study warning that 39 million people could die worldwide by the year 2050. Oh, boy. So we're down to about 25 years left due to antimicrobial resistance. It's related to superbugs that do not respond to antibiotics because they've been used so much, including for colds or other viruses. And remind folks, Dr. Brown, because I know you and I talked about this before, that superbugs are starting to override our common antibiotics. And we've even seen that a lot of the over-the-shelf medications, for example, in this last year, there were new reports, right, that were showing that a lot of them are not even that effective. I mean, what is your reaction to this? And, of course, how do we respond to this effectively then? It's like, oh, man, what do we do in the next 25 years to not add to that list?
Right. And this is one of those focused areas that I have a real interest in antibiotic resistance and hospital epidemiology. The concern, this is extremely concerning and something that's not, I say, you know, concerning but not surprising. This is something that's been occurring for years. And it continues to ramp up to almost exponential proportions. What happens in particular is that a bacteria that you may have heard about now, a resistant bacteria that is, it's called MRSA. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I think you've talked about that before. Maybe.
Yeah. So MRSA is a bacteria called
people
Staph
call it
aureus.
What MRSA, right? Isn't that
yeah,
what
MRSA? Yeah, MRSA. That's
yep.
exactly
yeah.
what it is.
I had to take
so
a second there.
Yeah, Staph aureus. So let me explain, just because this is the quintessential concern. Staph aureus is actually a very common bacteria that can be found on our skin. The problem is that it not only does it occur on our skin naturally and not an issue, but it can also cause a major amount of infections. So it's different variations of that same bacteria cause a lot of illness, including skin infections, can lead to heart infection, bone infections. But it is a very common. What's happened to that bacteria, Staph aureus, pretty quickly in the advent of antibiotics, started to develop resistance. And it developed resistance to its penicillin as a family, so a family of penicillin, the penicillin known as methicillin, which is a staph-specific antibiotic, developed resistance pretty quickly to it. Now that we have this MRSA, we're seeing it more and more. And not only is it resistant to methicillin, but it's resistant to all of the common antibiotics that you would use to treat a skin or soft tissue infection. And you can imagine that if someone comes in and they have, and again, I'll be a little bit more drastic, doesn't quite work like this, but someone may come in and they have a skin infection. You give them an antibiotic thinking, okay, this antibiotic is going to do the trick. It's tough to swab these things because it can be natural, but there's not sometimes not a great way to test it. You give them an antibiotic and the antibiotic doesn't work and they get worse. And that infection can then go from a minor infection to a major infection. And that's the concern about antibiotic resistance just in that specific case alone.
Interesting. I mean, so what do you do, Dr. Brown? So it's interesting, like while you're talking about this, we had some people reach out, for example, we had somebody, I'm going to keep them anonymous, but one of our listeners said, when treating Bartonella, tick-borne parasite, mm-hmm. I mean, antibiotics, anti-malaria drugs, is that still a good idea? I think that's just an example, of course, but when you're talking about so many things, even colds, like we understand that people have over-medicated their kids when it's like, hey, you got to ride out RSV, right? I mean, we have to do things like that. But when we're being called to use antibiotics to sort of help with the symptoms of something, but it's not really eliminating it per se, I mean, what would be your suggestion? Like, what do you do?
Right. I don't want to be
on the list of people dying. I want to avoid that. That's my thing.
I know. I think the public needs to be aware that antibiotics are not just it's not just something that you take, that there are consequences related to that. Consequences that can, lead to societal issues as well as personal issues later on in life. So being careful about the antibiotics. Now, listen, if you have an appropriate infection, yes, you need to be on you need to be on an antibiotic. Your doc will say this is the antibiotic that you need to be on. I don't think there's anything wrong to question and say, do I need to be on this antibiotic? I think that's always a reasonable question to ask. The issue becomes is overuse of antibiotics, in particular longer durations that don't need to be used, as well as using antibiotics for viruses. And we've tried really hard, and there's been a decrease in the use for children for using antibiotics when we have certain types of infections that are clearly viral and almost always viral.
Oh, Dr. Brown, I tell you. Okay, well, we're going to keep an eye on it. Of course, we always appreciate having you on a weekly basis, and I'm sure hopefully nothing this major pops up in the next week, but we know you'll be back, so we thank you. Always need you in our corner, our peace of mind in the medical field. Dr. Fred Brown of Griffin Health, right here on WICC.